Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Virtual learning, distance learning, learning from home, Zoom school, educating children under COVID-19 restrictions has been called many things since schools first shut down last March. It happened so fast, and the pandemic laid bare so many issues and disparities, including internet access or lack thereof. But now, a spotty vaccination process is underway, and there's a political push to open schools. But how are the children doing after all of this time learning from home? But joining me to talk about this are Dr. Lavanya Sithanatham. She is a pediatrician serving Montgomery and Prince George's counties. And Lisa Lakes, she is a parent with a child in the Prince George's County school system. I want to hear from you tonight about this issue. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. That's 202-319-7810. You can certainly reach me via Twitter at HFisher, W-H-U-R, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Ms. Lakes, Dr. Sithanatham, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Let me start with you, Lisa, and your experience with learning from home regarding your child. Tell me about your child a little bit and how it's been.
Well, Harold, it has been a journey, a very difficult one. Just started high school. He's a freshman. He did very well. When they shut down in March, he, at that last quarter, pretty much got all A's and B's except for math. He struggled a little bit there. So he pulled through. And we were all just kind of optimistic, especially when the numbers were going down in the summer, that he would be able to return, at least, certainly not, you know, full-time, but at least on a hybrid model. And we found out that there had been indeed plans, as the governor asked, for the schools to open, and we were optimistic. And months went by, and not until last week did we find out that there had been a plan. But during that time, my son has, you got to remember, he's transitioning from a whole, you know, to a whole new life, to high school. So it's a different game than middle school. And so all types of things have to be in place for him to fully grasp that experience, him and other kids to grasp that experience and to fall into high school. And you can't, you simply, it's next to impossible to do in a virtual environment where you don't have your peers, you don't have your teachers, you don't have like the type of in-person energy that kids need. And especially with teenagers who are already going through hormonal issues, who are finding out who they are and who get extra energy from their peers and developing that, it's very rough. And for my son, it's not been any different. You know, he tries to hang tough. He does his best. But there are times where he just gets tired and he just gives up. And I do all the things that I should be doing, talk to his teachers, get him tutoring. Every week, I talk to him about his state of mind. We've been to family counseling. I get him out to exercise, and I stay on him about the grades. But there is no substitute for in-person learning. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Sithanatham, you have a unique perspective. You are a physician, a pediatrician, but you are also a mother. Talk to me from your perspective, what impact has distance learning had on your two boys, as well as the parents and the children that are your patients?
Right. Yes. I think that, you know, I've been practicing for the last 15 years in this area, and I have never seen as many children and teenagers going through such a struggle and having so many mental health issues. The amount of kids I'm seeing that are really suffering with depression, anxiety, you know, even suicide attempts. I have an 11-year-old you know, patient who tried to kill herself. And these kids, the vast majority of them, did not have any mental health issues prior to this past year. They come from loving homes. They get a lot of support. But just that social isolation piece has been incredibly devastating to so many kids because, you know, it's just as important as food and water for children and teenagers, as Lisa had mentioned. And, you know, it's just so hard because I've known these children since they were born, the vast majority of them, and their parents. So to see them come in and just look like a shell of who they are is just been really hard. You know, I do have two boys. They're 12 and 15, so they're a little bit older. They're more independent. You know, we've been able to get them tutors just right from the start and to supplement their education. So I've been very fortunate in that, you know, that they've been doing okay. Although my younger son is now like completely a video game addict. So he's just, you know, glued to technology all day long and then in the evening. So, you know, it's impacting families in a lot of different ways. But it's really just heartbreaking what I'm seeing day in and day out in my clinics.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the impact of distance learning on children and families as we now enter a full year of being under the COVID-19 pandemic lockdown for our schools. If you have a comment, if you have a question, I'd like to entertain your phone calls at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Sithanya Thumb, one thing you mentioned that struck me about, you said an 11-year-old had attempted suicide, as I'm sure you're well aware, and I don't have to, you know, tell you that youth suicide was an issue long before the pandemic, and indeed there are studies that show that it has been on the rise before we had ever heard of COVID-19, not to discount the impact of it, but are you suggesting that you have seen, whether it's data-driven or anecdotally, more instances of this issue since March of 2020?
Yes, in my clinic, that's what we are seeing. We've documented a 30% increase in referrals for mental health therapists. And, you know, we've had, like I said, more children in our practice hospitalized for, you know, attempted suicide. And I don't think that there's really national data yet to look at, you know, has suicide increased during the pandemic. But we also have to remember that sometimes, you know, as things are getting better, as, you know, we kind of come out of it and as, you know, children, teenagers, adults have more energy, that's unfortunately when you start to see, you know, suicide on the rise. So it might just be we're more like in the middle of things that we don't really have that, you know, kind of data yet nationally. But I do know that the CDC did release a report that showed that there was a significant increase in emergency rooms from children that were going there for mental health reasons.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, what is your opinion about going back to school? And from the perspective of a parent, how would you see that happening for your child and for his peers? Are you ready to start back next week, next month? What in your mind would be the process?
Try back in August, especially sure. When it was safer to do so. To answer your question specifically, though, currently, I definitely think that March 1st, as the governor and Dr. Salmon like laid out, is an ideal time frame, and if not March 1st, at least somewhere in that area. But given that the districts, and I do want to say that Dr. Golson, you know, pretty much the day before the governor came out with his announcement on inauguration day at that, did come out with a press release saying, okay, we're going to try to go back. Now, this is, I don't know, I'm not saying it's a result of, but certainly there had been a lot of heated discussions amongst some parents and teachers and folks who want to reopen, like myself, about how this could happen. I see it happening in March in a hybrid model, to be realistic. I mean, we know that Prince George's County has led and probably continues to lead the state in cases. We know that. We know that there's a legitimate fear among teachers and among parents about going back hybrid even. And even the vaccine doesn't tend to allay those fears, at least in the people that I've been talking with. So, but we're talking about, this is a discussion about the kids that need to go back, you know, that whose parents know that they need to go back. And I think that every child, right now, the CEO's metrics, when I look at them, it's almost as though like everything has to be below 5%, rate of infection. I don't know if that's a realistic, I think it's attainable, especially with the, you know, it's a possibility with the vaccine rolling out. But regardless of metrics, I think that there is some way for kids to be able to go back to class at all grade levels. And I think that a priority, I'm not saying that any class of kid or grade of kid is more important than the other, but if you're going to open, you know, elementary schools, then I don't understand why middle and high school can't open. So I would say virtually as soon as possible. I would also very quickly add that, you know, to my understanding, and I've been watching the news like a hawk and reading everything that I can, there was money available to get these schools prepared to reopen. I mean, that was the whole idea of giving the money to get the PPE and whatnot, to be able to open the classrooms. Mm-hmm. They've had since March, right? And so I'm hearing a lot of comments from people that are saying, well, we're not ready. We ain't gonna be ready by March. And I'm like, but you've had the money and you've had the month. You've had the time.
Yeah.
We're talking almost a year. So, I mean, again, I applaud Dr. Golson for taking a stand on this because it is very polarized in Prince George's County. I know Lavanya, working in Montgomery there too, but I am curious about, well, why aren't you ready? Mm. It's, you know, I just saw a CNN report that said with all of this PPE, schools are safer than, you know, than the communities as a whole.
I do want to address that point in a moment, but I need to go to the phone lines. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the COVID-19 pandemic and the reopening of schools. What do you think? Is it time to allow some form of in-person learning for children? Let's go to Lamont, calling from Germantown. Lamont, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Great show as usual. I have a fourth grader, sixth grader, and the issue with my daughters, I say, hey, you really now know how you need to appreciate what you had as far as having teacher and friends. And they're struggling because they turn off the camera. So that I think mentally it's just difficult for anyone. And then I have a junior at Bowie State. Now he's going through the separation of the friendship and relationships in college. So me as a father, I remind them, hey, I served in the military, and myself, I never took online because I needed that interaction. So I understand that anyone who's pursuing any type of education, interaction is very critical with relationships and the point of learning. I could never had all the years I went to school. I couldn't do online. So I think we should hold off for this year. I know the different counties have the money, but as a parent, I just do not want any of my kids, even my 21-year-old, in school at college. Thank you for the show. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Lamont. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Ashley, calling from Germantown. Ashley, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Yes, I have a three-year-old son, and I really just wanted to know, you know, do we think it's any, I know, you know, high school, middle school, elementary, you're saying it's okay, or it should be okay to go back with toddlers in daycare, do we think it's any more of a threat to them being that, you know, they're just naturally, you know, licking and touching and, you know, just high touch people at that age? How do we feel about daycare for toddlers?
I think that's a really excellent question. Dr. Sithanyatham?
Right. Yeah. Thank you for the question. It's a really good one. So they've actually done so many studies now, you know, across the country and around the world, and they've really shown that for children especially, the vast majority of them do, you know, even if they catch COVID, it's really a very, like, mild illness. Oftentimes, they might not even have any symptoms. But actually, they've shown, like, the daycares are some of the safest places that, you know, that the incidence of or the amount of cases, the younger the child is just so much lower. And the spread within, you know, daycares and early elementary schools is just incredibly low. And also, there was a really big report that came out today by the CDC that just said, look, you know, we've looked at all the studies. There's been so many, and there's also a new one that just came out of Wisconsin. And as Lisa was saying, they really concluded that schools and daycare centers are actually some of the safest places where children can be, and even for staff. And that, you know, when they looked at, you know, in the Wisconsin study, there was over 5,300 students there, and only 7 got COVID through the school. So I feel extremely confident about sending my children back to school, as long as, you know, they're doing those safety precautions. You know, and it's not even a, you know, very complicated precautions that they have to take. It's wearing the mask and, you know, distancing. So I think that, of course, you know, there's been a lot of money that's been spent in terms of upgrading the filtration systems, you know, for the sanitizing. But really, at the end of the day, it's about that mask. And some people say, well, kids aren't going to keep that mask on. You know, that's crazy. But from my experience, kids are actually extremely good with masking. It's sometimes the adults that we have to remind to say, hey, get that mask above your nose.
Yeah.
But the kids, you know, they're used to it now. It's kind of like wearing underwear.
Well, doctor, hold your point. Hold your point. I'm going to let you finish up. I need to take a break. We want to remind our listeners that you can hear this and every discussion on the Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. It's posted before 9 p.m. every night. And don't forget, stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. Make sure you download the app from Google Play or the Apple Store so that you can hear the program in its entirety live. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on WHUR. This conversation continues on SiriusXM Channel 141 in a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking about reopening schools after 13 months of living under the pandemic restrictions. My guests are Dr. Lavanya Sithamantham and pediatrician. She's a pediatrician serving Montgomery and Prince George's County, and also Lisa Lakes. She's a parent with a child in the Prince George's County school system. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Doctor, you can finish your point.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, the kids, they now understand the expectation that they have to keep that mask on. And I think that, you know, that's easy for them. And I think that, you know, if for any reason that's not happening in the school, I think the schools also know that they can enforce that, you know, by, you know, because there's also a virtual option. If a child can't consistently keep that mask on, it's a possibility they might not be able to stay in school. But I think that kids miss school so much. They're just so desperate to do anything to get back. You know, I heard a story today of a girl that was just so sad because her younger sister was going to preschool, and she was just so upset that she couldn't. And so she was doing extra homework and, you know, reading extra books, just asking her mom, you know, if I do this, can I go back to school? So as the first caller had mentioned, you know, I think the kids really appreciate what they had before. And I think that, you know, the masking part will actually be one of the easiest things for them.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. D calling from Northeast D.C. Thanks for calling, D. What's on your mind?
Yes. How you doing, Harold?
I'm doing fine.
Yes, I have kids myself, and I have two grandkids myself as well. And my grandson will be two on the 19th of September and everything. But my daughter, she has my grandson in, you know, preschool right now. And I always talk to her and ask her, does he have his mask on? She says, yes, he leaves it on and everything. But so the whole thing to it is really, I do feel that kids should be in school, but for right now, I don't think they should really just open these schools up.
Why not?
Not right now. Because, I mean, while this plague is out here, it seems like it's more that's on top of it to what we don't know about to even, you know, put for the education to be open. And that really, you know, is not good, but schools definitely is good, you know, for the kids to even really have, because, you know, that's really teaching them to, you know, teaching and showing them to how to product themselves to when they get to where we are.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't feel right now that they should be able to open these schools up, because to what everything is going on and to everything that is being heard on news, and as well as everybody, people dying from this thing.
Yeah. Well, Dee, thank you so much. I appreciate your input. Dr. Sudhamantham, I want to challenge you with something based on what you mentioned in this conversation, something that the CDC has mentioned that we heard echoed by Governor Larry Hogan last week, and where it seems that, you know, everyone is kind of reading from the you know, the same chapter and verse about the safety of children in schools, the evidence that suggests that community spread is not a severe consideration for the children, that, as you mentioned, that in daycare centers, they are the safest places. But the thing that has been omitted from these conversations, and as a matter of fact, Montgomery County Executive Mark Elridge mentioned this last night, was the thing that is not talked about is situations where older parents or grandparents are living in communal settings with families with young children. And so, yes, we do know that it is a fact that children, even if they test positive, that they are less likely to be sick. And young people, you know, high school students and the like, less likely to be sick. They may even be asymptomatic. But as you know, doctor, the people who are dying most from COVID are seniors, and many of them live in the same households. How do you address that when we talk about the issue of reopening schools and the chance that children could contract the disease and bring it home to older loved ones?
Right. Yeah, that's an excellent point. What I would say is that from, you know, all the schools that have been open across the country and the world, and even in our own backyards, like private schools, equity hubs, you know, that's not what they're seeing. And really, what they're showing actually is that when kids are not in school, especially teenagers, they're more likely to meet up, you know, and meet in places where they're not masked, and more likely, you know, to catch that and potentially bring it home. Whereas in school, that's kind of a regulated sort of environment where it's a safer place, where that possibility of catching it from someone else is a lot less, even if someone comes to school who's positive. In fact, they show that the teachers and adults are more likely to get COVID from other adults, not from a child. Children are not as likely to be positive and not as likely to spread COVID. And I know that, you know, other people will point to, you know, different data or different studies, but when they really look at it, you know, science, it comes to a consensus by looking at, you know, the best studies, the ones that are the largest, the ones that are reproducible, where they show, you know, another finding. And so sometimes they can find these outlier data that really, you know, sometimes from blog sites or, you know, even Twitter. But honestly, when you look at reputable journals, reputable scientific studies, really large studies, it is over and over and over again showing a pattern. And that pattern is that when kids go to school, they're not catching it from other kids. They're not bringing it home. In fact, if they are not in school, they're more likely to get it through that, you know, household spread. So I would actually say the family members, older family members, are actually safer if schools in that community are open.
Mm-hmm. And Lisa, what do you say to the teachers who continue to give a lot of pushback, particularly, again, older teachers who are concerned about going back to class, even if it's in a limited hybrid situation?
What I have been saying to them for the last, like, several weeks, I've been in the heat of it, is if you go to Walmart, the thing that really lit a fire under me, started with this activism, is when it was announced that casinos could open at, you know, I think it was 25% capacity. So they're allowed to operate now. For a while there, we were doing, like, at some capacity restaurants, like sit-down restaurants, and all these other non-essential places, you know, these businesses that have opened to some capacity. And then you have the necessities, right? You know, you have the grocery store. You have going to work if you have to go to work and getting on public transit. I mean, there are high touches of things all out there. And so what I've said to people is, you know, to teachers and some parents alike, is yes, I understand. Everyone, you know, I understand your concerns and everyone is concerned. But what I've been hearing back are things that are tantamount to, I don't ever want to leave the house. So you're talking about a Walmart or a Target where you have to go, right, to get groceries, you have to go to the drugstore. Yeah, they have, like, certain things in there, sanitizers and whatnot. But then as opposed to what is supposed to be in the schools now, the PPE, the masks, the staff to, or the, you know, extra staff to make sure things are clean in between classes if they're switching classes. You're talking about shields. In D.C., they've got, I think that I've seen partitions, like, of shields. You've got, like, an abundance, or you're supposed to have, our schools are supposed to have, in PG, an abundance of this, of these things. And, you know, like Lavanya was saying, that makes these schools safer than the rest of the community and all the variant things that are going on outside of a structured environment, a safe environment like that. So that is what I have been saying and continue to say, as along with talking about, like, other schools, like in New York, even though they're closed down now, and I'm talking about New York City, not just the state. But these are highly dense populations. I mean, New York is one of the most highly dense in the world. And they have managed to bring back their students, at least on a hybrid model, a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And even though they've had to shut down, and I know that there are lots of problems with that, and I do get that, but the fact of the matter is they try. And okay. I wish that we would make a better effort.
Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Judith, calling from D.C. Hey, Judith, what's on your mind?
I know you talked about isolation depression. I want to ask the doctor and the advocate for opening, and I'd love to see the children back in school. But what kind of effect will grown-ups not being held accountable for their lives? According to the Washington Post today, the president over his term told 30,573 falsehoods, false claims. We call them lies. And of course, January 6th activities. What effect will it have on the young people that the doctor serves if these people, grown people, are not held accountable? And what effect do the two guests feel that will have in terms of affecting the authority that teachers and administrators have over the young people in the school if grown-ups are not held accountable for their wrong actions and their lies?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
People and youth see the television, they see their phones, they hear the news, they see what has been said about COVID, and then somebody else says it's false. That's not the truth. I'm asking these two professionals what effect they think that will have on the children in school and outside school. The grown-ups.
Let me see if the doctor can address that. That's a really interesting and very complex question, doctor. Do you have any? And maybe we could, you know, simplify, because and I think that Judith is right. Mm-hmm. Depending on what part of the country you live in, or even sometimes what part of the state, it may impact how you address COVID.
Right.
In your community, because there are some people who do not believe that it is real, and there are and some of those people have children who are in school. I think that's an interesting point.
Yeah.
Doctor, your thoughts first.
Yeah, thank you for that question. It's a really good one, and I think it brings up a lot of really interesting points, because when kids in that school environment, and a lot of the information they're getting is not just from like remote learning, but also just so much, you know, we're all getting addicted to technology and social media, and kids too, they're getting so much information from different sources and online, and this country has been through so much, and children have been through so much. How do you address that? And I think that the schools are already doing a really good job of incorporating like social emotional kind of lessons into their planning. And they plan to do a lot of that. My issue and concern is that those social emotional lessons cannot replace a friend and interacting with a friend. So even though they're trying really hard to address some of this, you really need to do that in person, with in-person kind of lessons. And, you know, schools provide so much more than just academics. They really do provide, a sense of values, of, you know, lessons through the curriculum. And I think that that's kind of shaped by, kind of community values. I think, you know, Montgomery County, Prince George's, you know, have done a really good job of, and could do even better, of like emphasizing, you know, equity and emphasizing, just incorporating like history and incorporating the truth and facts. And that's the other thing, is sometimes you need to hear that in from your schools to kind of correct some of these, you know, fake news and falsehoods and sort of things. And it also brings up just the point of just the importance of, when we have these students return to school, everything that is being done should be looked at from, you know, kind of a trauma lens, because people, like I said, have been traumatized. So some kids may not be ready to be able to absorb that information, because they might have had, you know, a family member that was sick, or, you know, sadly passed away, or they may have, just been really affected by the school closure. So I think that the first step is just to get them back, because just having that routine of going to school and seeing friends is one of the most therapeutic things. So I think that that's, you know, what you know, I would say. And if it's okay, I just wanted to jump in with your prior question about the older teachers. And I think that all teachers will have the ability to apply for disability. And, you know, if they do get the ADA, absolutely they should be able to stay home and not have to put themselves, you know, at risk because they are higher risk. And similarly, some families might not feel comfortable to return for the spring. And all the school systems have the option of allowing kids to continue working from home, especially, you know, if they don't feel comfortable this spring. What we're talking about is please open the doors for the families that do feel comfortable with sending their children, and really, you know, some of the special needs kids, some of the younger kids, you know, have really, really shown that they do need to be back. And so I do hope, though, that the vast majority of my families in the fall will choose to send their kids back, because going more than a year without school is really devastating to these kids. And COVID is not going to go away. There's no magic bullet. Even those vaccines, you know, we're always going to have some level of COVID, unfortunately. And so we have to get over some of the fear and recognize that what we can do is minimize the risk through these various measures. And I think a lot of teachers will have at least gotten their first vaccine by March 1st, despite the slow rollout. We're starting to see that, you know, in these next week or two, 3 weeks, a lot of teachers are getting vaccinated. So that's additional protection. And we just have to remember all of that.
Lisa, to Judith's question, from a more foundational point of view, wouldn't it just be simple enough to say that even if there are households who want their children back in school who do not believe that COVID-19 is real, that they have to follow the rules just like they would have to follow them if they go into Walmart or Giant, where no mask, no service?
If I'm understanding your question correctly, I'm going to answer it like this, and you tell me if I got it right. I would say, let me preface it with, yes, children, the caller's question about what are they looking at and what are they seeing in society. They're seeing society blow up all over them. They're seeing bickering and politics. They're seeing, you know, life being snuffed out by the police. And they're doing that without any type of peer support and, like, kind of validation and, like, grounding of anything normal. And so they're bombarded with it. The question that about behaviors then does become a lot difficult to have, because children, as teens, again, I have one, tend to form their own opinion about the world. And, you know, they're like, well, hey, these people, you know, who did an insurrection on the Capitol weren't wearing masks. I see people not wearing masks. Like, I'm going to do what I want to do. And when that's all you're left with, because that's all you're seeing day to day, you're on a screen for 6 hours a day. You go through that and you have no type of live interaction with other in-person human beings. You're left to your own devices. And so I think that what's been going on in our world over the past year has bombarded those thoughts and made kids kind of sink deeper into themselves, because they don't even feel validated, or they don't even feel valuable, rather, in this situation, because they're not even, you know, they're failing their grades, and, you know, the grading system hasn't gotten any better. So they're not getting any traction there. They're just like, okay, no one's helping me. People are forgetting about me. And then the world is going crazy. So why should I be a quote unquote good citizen, wear my mask, I'm going to do what I want. So all of these things kind of converge. They come together into the situation where kids are bound to feel hopeless or reckless. And I think that in-person interaction with teachers and with their fellow classmates, particularly at the teenager age, kind of mitigates that and makes their world look more normal and hopeful. Mm-hmm. Did I answer that correctly?
You answered it as you saw fit, and that was just fine. Judith, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lisa, when schools open back up, and your child goes back to school, what will be your biggest concern?
Absolutely nothing. That my biggest concern right now, to answer it in a different way, is looking at the county executive metrics. And now that Dr. Golson is saying, okay, we're going to follow those metrics, is that it will take even longer for my son to be able to go back. And for kids his age, the middle and high school kids are completely kind of like last. But when those doors open for him, and I have said, I don't care if he goes, and he has said, I don't care if I go in one day a week, I fear nothing. My kid knows to keep his mask on. And I've heard some really, you know, kind of good ideas coming from teachers about, and I hate to say punitive, but I mean, you know, if an older kid who knows better is going to consistently not do as they know they're supposed to do, and not wear their mask, and I think there should be some level of repercussion for that. I think that they should be, you know, the parents should be talking, and there should be some enforcement of that, I'll say. So that being said, and as long as, again, for the students and for the teachers, that the PPE is there, the money has been there, we're getting another round, we should have everything we need, and vaccines on the way. So if we get that straight, I don't have any concerns, and I have pre-existing conditions. And my kids actually contracted the virus back during Thanksgiving because he was so isolated, and his best friend wanted him to come over. And I said, oh, God, please use your mask, and it's just going to be you two, right? Okay. And sure enough, you know, that's how you get it. He got it. I didn't get it, or I probably did, and it was mild, thank God. But
did you get tested
earlier? You know, where they're not in a structured environment.
Did you get tested after your son tested positive?
No, we got tested at the same time because, you know, we just did. I just, you know, after that, I was, like, concerned. And so I just, you know, we went to the testing center, got tested at the same time. I got mine back. I was negative. He got his back. He's positive. Of course, I cried and cried and cried. But I remember telling a friend of mine, who's a school teacher, I remember telling her, and I still want kids to go back. Like, you know, it still didn't daunt my fear about children going back. And I have diabetes. I mean, I have a couple of pre-existing conditions. And I'm older. I'm like, you know, I have them late. I'm like 50, 54 in a few weeks. So,
well, let me ask the doctor about that. And because you just raised a really critical point, and I think it's important that we give parents the best information.
Mm-hmm.
That you said this happened after Thanksgiving. This is now the end of January, and you were tested once and you were negative. But doctor, I am sure that Lisa is not alone in that scenario, and that there are children who have tested positive and parents who may have tested negative. Should they get tested again after the first negative test if a child in the household is positive?
Oh, that's a really good question. So generally what we recommend is, you know, if you've been exposed to someone that has COVID, you want to wait 4 to 5 days to get tested if you don't have any symptoms. That's the ideal time to pick up a positive test, because there is a thing as getting tested too early or too late. Obviously, if you do have symptoms, then, you know, like a fever or runny nose, you're going to get tested regardless at any point. But if you don't have any symptoms and you've been exposed to someone, and that exposure means that it's, you know, for more than 15 minutes and you've been within 6 feet, the recommendation is to get tested, you know, 4 to 5 days. And I have some patients who come in too early and it's a negative test, and I'll tell them, you know, it may be best to come back and get retested. But, you know, if they've been exposed, then, you know, you have that quarantine period regardless. So even if the test is negative, they should not be, around anybody else, so that just in case they actually are positive and didn't get retested, you're not supposed to kind of be around anyone else in order to prevent spread.
And I ask that certainly, for two reasons. My daughter is a type 1 diabetic, and she is 22, and she, God bless her, walks around with something akin to a body condom when she walks out of the house, I'm joking, but I'm really not joking.
Right.
And so we want to make sure that that the Lisa Lakes of our community are around to continue their advocacy when these things, happen. And so I will say that I'm glad that you are okay these many weeks after your son tested positive, and we certainly hope that he is also in the pink, as they say. Any final thoughts? I've got about 30 seconds for both of you. Lisa, you first.
I'd just like to say that I do wish that there's a concerted effort, and there will be a concerted effort to really not make this decision among our districts based on politics, but by on the data, on the science, first and foremost, the data we do have, and that is that kids are failing in record numbers, and they are depressed, and they are killing themselves. Mm-hmm.
And doctor, your final thoughts?
My final thought would be that, we as individuals, as a community, can completely respect and fear COVID and take all the precautions, wear the mask, but also recognize that there are some essential services and places that, we need to keep open, such as schools and grocery stores. And so if we feel like teachers are essential, then we really need them in those school classrooms for our children to teach. And I really hope as a society, we will really value children and our teenagers and our students, rather than kind of treating them or thinking of them as some sort of viral spewing pariahs that we should kind of keep locked away.
Absolutely.
And that, we can do all of that. We can get COVID rates down. We can respect COVID, but we can also recognize that the science shows us that schools should be open.
Lisa Lakes and Dr. Lavanya Sithamantham, thank you so much. I hope I did not butcher your name too terribly.
Oh, you did great. I'm going to make you an honorary South Indian now.
Yes, I'm working on that. So thank you so much. I appreciate your time, and good luck to both of you.
Thank you.
This is fun. So much, Harold. Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, January 26th, 2021. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.